Alien Isolation. I've watched people play it, and it is terrifying. Hello, welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast. My name's Jazza.
My name's Jimmy.
And we're joined
by John Midswig.
Midswig.
It's not even late on a bank holiday Sunday, but it's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But we thought we'd crack out the beers and have a nice little chat with you guys. That's what we do. We talk about politics, social issues, and current events on a weekly basis. Mm. Genuinely do. It's episode 79.
Is it?
Is that?
Ooh. Let's commit.
It's 79 or 80. I think it's 79.
It's 79. Yeah. Otherwise, I would have already made like a mental note that we've hit a round number.
Yeah.
Jimmy, can you tell the dear... Actually, because lots of people wouldn't have actually heard you,
no,
John.
No, no, I'll come back.
Describe who you are.
Who am I? I'm...
It's going to be a long
An existential question.
You are, rather than a normal guest, you are a friend of ours.
I'm a friend. Yeah. I'm a...
Most of our guests aren't friends.
I'm a wannabe playwright by day and night and... Anything else?
Anything in between.
And early evenings and afternoons.
Yeah. Not yet to be paid.
It's okay. Cool. There we go. That was an odd introduction. Jimmy, what are we going to talk about this week?
So, for our free topics, we are going to be covering the UK general election. I know Jazza...
I'm sick of it already.
Jazza is already bored, but...
No, I'm not bored. I'm just actively visceral about it.
Okay. He's actively visceral about it, but I think we're probably going to be covering it most weeks up until the actual day.
I know we have to.
Jazz is going to do it begrudgingly, but
Have I told you that I'm going to be doing a vlog every day up to the election?
Yes, you have.
Yeah. So I'm going to. I don't know if it's going to be 15, 20, or 30 videos in the run up to the 8th of June, but I'm just gonna. I'm probably going to vomit like just every day on camera.
Cool.
Because I'm so sick of everything.
Cool. More on that later. In other election news, we're going to be covering the French elections.
Which is going to be in a week's time.
Yeah, the second round of the presidential election is, as Jazza says, in a week's time. Last weekend?
Yeah, they had the first round.
Emmanuel Macron of En Marche, and Marine Le Pen of the National Front in France went through
the first time ever that major centre-right and major centre-left parties didn't get through to the final round.
Yeah, so it's the Socialists and the Republicans.
Yeah, so Macron is...
Former socialist,
but started his own movement, and Le Pen is a racist. We're allowed to say this. We don't even have to say allegedly.
I don't think Marie Le Pen is going to sue us one way or the other.
No, fair. But somebody, a French newspaper, said that she was fascist, and she tried to sue them, and then the French courts found that she actually was fascist, and that the papers were allowed to say that she was fascist.
Wow, that's beautiful.
What is the technical legal definition of a fascist?
I have. It was in French. I just read the headline. It was glorious.
That is pretty glorious. So we'll probably get away with whatever we want to say about her.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, in sort of world apocalypse destruction news, we're going to be covering the quarrel, disputes between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea.
And North Korea in general.
Yes.
And the fact that that's going to be where we go to war next.
I mean, the UK ducked out of the last Korean War, so I'm confident we can repeat the trick
until
this time.
I thought we were in the last Korean War.
Were we in the last Korean War?
I think we were.
You're
thinking Vietnam.
I'm thinking Vietnam, yeah. So actually, we are going to go to war in
the Korean War that was the one that all of the American allies actually did because, like, it was seen as, like, an actual just cause, whereas Vietnam was just a fucking shit show and everybody bowed out then.
Yeah.
Us, Canada.
Okay.
France. The Australians still went to Vietnam.
Australia's been in every major war with the US since World War II.
And we get the American lapdog label.
Yeah.
Very annoying.
It's really them that are the bitches.
Yeah.
To be fair, nobody's going to call it...
Come out of Australia.
Yeah.
We might have one or two listeners in Australia. Please write in and complain.
Send us a postcard, will you?
Australian stereotypes are so much more threatening than British stereotypes. It's easier to call us lapdogs. If you called an Australian a a lapdog. Like, even just stereotypically, you're going to get glass in the face.
They are very far, they're very far away, though, so, you know. Oh, I know. We can insult them.
Oh,
they
just throw a crop down. There's a lot of them that live here, Jimmy. Anyway.
Whatever.
So, how are you not sick of this election yet?
Oh, you should be happy. This week we found out that Tim Farron actually loves the gays.
Yeah, can we talk about Tim?
You're
again,
not dirty
briefly?
Sinners. It's Tim, all okay.
We talked about him last week.
So Tim Farron, the Lib Dem leader, has been equivocal on whether or not gay sex is a sin. And most recently...
Awkward question, what does equivocal mean?
He's been sort of one side and the other.
Okay, flip.
He's swung both ways
okay.
on this question.
Well, I mean, he's never actually swung both ways.
Well, you never know. Everybody's had a college past.
Well, basically, he's a Christian, and he almost certainly believes that gay sex is itself a sin, although he has said that being gay is not a sin, and he's also said, we are all sinners, and, you know, hate the sin, love the sinner, and all of that junk. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about all this?
You asked me last week.
My
opinion
feel
the
same?
Is the same.
Is it going to play out?
Like I said last week, this is one of the main reasons that I wasn't comfortable, that I didn't vote for him to be the leader of the Lib Dems. I feel like, as a decent man, he is having a struggle of conscience because he wants to be able to be honest when people ask him questions. Interestingly, Theresa May on the Andrew Marr show today was also asked, as a Christian, do you believe that gay sex is a sin? She says no. In the past, she has said exactly that and voted that way.
Her voting record is way poorer than Tim Farron's.
It's appalling. She has apparently now changed her mind. I'm okay with that. People should have the right to change their mind. But the fact that she was able to capitalise on that and give such a binary answer to Tim Farron stumbling over his words and... like wanting to be able to have a nuanced discussion about faith and politics that isn't going to happen when you're being interviewed by somebody on Channel 4 News.
I mean, contextually, it makes more sense that she was sort of anti homosexuality because she grew up. She's the daughter of a reverend, isn't she?
Yeah, a vicar. Yeah.
So that I mean, that makes more sense. Really, you're probably going.
It
to
depends
be
what. What I don't think.
I'm not saying you know that homophobia is doing you wrong.
And Dawn French wasn't. Didn't hate the gays.
Well,
is she a Christian?
No, but she played a vicar in the Vicky of Dibley in the late 90s and early noughties.
I mean, that's quite different to actually having a father as a vicar.
I know what you mean, though. It does depend on what type of Christian you are. And the general tendency does seem to be more accepting towards LGBT people these days.
In general...
What, in Christian circles?
Yeah, in Christian circles.
I wouldn't necessarily...
I'm not saying all of them do. I'm saying the tendency is...
I mean, the fastest growing sect of Christianity in the world is Pentecostalism, and they do not like gay people.
Okay, sorry, in the UK then.
Okay, that's different. No, I'm glad you clarified.
Clarification.
generally, I have Christian friends, and I don't particularly worry about how they're going to react to me or.
I mean, they
around.
Only think that you're sinning when you're having sex with somebody. So
I mean, I also.
Well, also the thoughts. The thoughts are bad.
But then if you have.
How can you win? Like.
Yeah. I am frustrated as a Lib Dem that we have a leader that is so easily able to kind of like
be undermined.
And to have the whole election strategy kind of sidetracked in the first week. I find that very, very frustrating because I think that the Lib Dems have actually quite a complicated message to take to the people that could do quite well with an awful lot of people. That is giving people a second. Vote in a referendum on the terms of Brexit. And I think that a lot of people would actually want that were they not constantly talking about Tim Farron thinking that buggery is
bad. I mean,
dad.
Are they, though? I kind of thought this week...
I feel like that's all of the coverage of the Lib Dems, apart from Rachel Johnson joining them.
But I don't know
broadly
how...
Broadly speaking, he has quite a strong media operation, though. Like, every single article where the Tories make a major policy announcement, Tim Farron is in there with a quote.
See, this is what I think. I saw all the coverage this week, and I thought, how deeply will that penetrate people's sort of consciousness of this election? Because, some people will pick up on the fact that he was asked about it, and it exposes his history, yada, yada, yada. I kind of think the general public will just go, he's leader of the Lib Dems. They're Remainers, aren't they? So if you're a Remainer, you're going to vote for them, otherwise you're not.
And also the joke with Tim Farron is no one knows who he is. So, like...
At least people know him as the homophobe.
Do you think, though? I'm not so sure.
I don't know. I'm a metropolitan liberal elite. I don't have my pulse on the...
He's quite an unattractive man.
Does that matter?
I don't know.
It's usually my thing to objectify the male politicians.
Speaking of attractive politicians, isn't Zach Goldsmith running in Richmond again?
He is again. As a Conservative.
As a Conservative, yeah.
Odd. Why did he bother with the whole by-election thing? Because they still want there to be a third runway, and he still opposes that?
He's an opportunist phony.
It'll be interesting. I hope that Sarah wins again.
Sarah Olney of the Lib Dems.
Yeah, who beat him in the by-election that we had last year.
Yeah.
First of all, she's off my party, but also, out of principle, don't fuck with the people of Richmond, you dick.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, are you still aligning yourself with the Lib Dems then? Is that the party you'll be voting for?
So I'm unfortunate enough to live in a really, really safe... Mm. I say unfortunate enough, some people will see it as lucky, but I'm in an incredibly safe Labour seat, which is kind of something that I've been... cursed with my whole life.
You have bitched about it.
I have lived in Labour in safe seats, be they Labour or Conservative, my whole life.
Mm.
And so my vote technically has never really counted, which is incredibly frustrating.
That is a kick in the nuts. Like,
especially as somebody who fucking loves democracy.
I really didn't. I didn't even vote in 2015 because I live in a Labour safe seat. And you can get angry and hit me with a book and whatever, but if you know that you live in a safe seat, it kind of takes the wind out of your sails because you think, well, this is a fucking wasted vote anyway.
Yeah, but it's still a signal that you don't want that particular government.
Yeah, but you don't live in a form of democracy where that actually fucking matters.
I mean, if you don't vote, they can ignore you, you tit.
They're going to anyway, because I'm in a Labour safe seat.
But even in a PR system, any one given vote doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're...
Yeah, but you get to go to somebody of the party that you voted for... who is then like kind of like your representative.
Yeah, yeah.
If I go to Lynn Brown here in West Ham, she doesn't particularly care about my views or representing my views in Parliament because I didn't vote for her and I'm not going to vote for her, and she doesn't really have to try for the votes in this constituency because she's a Labour politician and she gets 60% of the vote regardless. And I find that very frustrating, but I've talked about PR for till the fucking cows come home.
It annoys me because where I live as well has become quite gentrified recently, and if you go into any...
Where do you live?
Crystal Palace.
Just so that people can stalk you.
Oh yeah, yeah. Crystal Palace, which is near Dulwich. If you go into any of the cafes, people are always talking about how much they hate Brexit. So the Lib Dems could... From like a Remainer point of view, the Lib Dems could really clean up, but I don't even know whether the Lib Dems have put somebody up in... I think it would be Croydon
South. A lot of places it just won't be worth their while because, like, to actually build up a presence in a seat takes generations, basically, and that's how the Lib Dems managed to build up
2015,
to 50 or 60 seats.
No leaflets through the door, nobody came knocking. Like, the Lib Dems were nowhere to be seen. So I knew that there was no chance of them winning in my constituency.
They do have to be selective, though, because they don't have... They need to target
However, they do have the highest number of members they've ever had in their history.
Yeah, didn't they reach 100,000 recently?
Yeah, I think the record was like 102,000, which they must have surpassed.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, they have many members.
Yeah.
Broadly speaking, who do you think's going to win, John?
Oh, what? I think it's probably going to be a fucking landslide for Theresa May, isn't it?
Is it just a question of how many seats she wins by for you?
So I watched the Sunday Politics today, and whoever it was said something that I think is just so fucking true. They said this isn't really a referendum, considering you know how recently the last election had. This isn't really an election on sort of what party you want. It's an election on Jeremy Corbyn versus Theresa May, and the general public are not going to vote for Jeremy Corbyn.
Mm.
And in that sense, it makes sense as Theresa May to call the election.
Oh, yeah, actually.
What I think is interesting is that the only way for Theresa May is down from where she is right now. She's currently the most popular leader of a political party in modern times, since Churchill, I believe.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, she's at 51, 52% approval ratings.
Okay.
In terms of, like, the most competent leader, yeah. which is higher than Margaret Thatcher ever had, which is higher than Tony Blair ever had, who are our two longest-serving prime ministers to date. And I think that it will be interesting to see how either the Lib Dems or Labour are able to kind of chip away at that, because the only way is down. And interestingly, we only have, what, 5.5 weeks until Election Day? Mm. I think that plays to her favour, because there's not enough time to kind of build up that narrative against her. Also, Jeremy Corbyn he's basically running another campaign to be leader of the Labour Party, and I'm just really bored and sick
of
him being so bad at his job. Yeah. And I find that, as I've said this 100 million times on the bloody podcast, I am sick of there not being a fucking opposition in this country, and that the SNP are the most effective thing and the closest thing to an opposition that we have, and I can't even fucking vote for them.
It was really embarrassing that the other week he had that, he's the guy who does the BBC thing on Sundays.
Andrew Marr.
He was on the Andrew Marr thing and said that there was going to be a review of Trident. And then immediately Labour had to scramble to say the official Labour line was that they would support Trident or something. Mm. You can't have embarrassing situations like that going into an election. It's humiliating for everyone.
I didn't see that as maybe because of the amount of embarrassment that has happened between Labour, the party's message, and Jeremy Corbyn's message in the past, the amount of time that's actually gone to shit.
Yeah.
I didn't see that as a huge...
No. Don't get me wrong. It's not like the worst thing that he's ever done or the worst thing that's happened to him, but it just concretizes what the everyman out there thinks of him.
Concretizes?
Yeah, he's... New word. Concretizes. He's...
Makes
concrete.
I like it. I don't like it.
On another point, I don't think we've discussed the kind of UKIP situation there.
Paul Nuttall's actually running now.
Paul Nuttall is running for a seat, and he put
in
out...
Boston. Did you see... It was so funny.
He's come out and said that if they get in, they're going to scrap VAT on takeaway.
Swayed.
Am I the only one?
I'm curious to read the rest of their manifesto now.
Fuck. Oh God.
Also, they want to ban the veil in public places.
Yeah.
They've just become a little bit too crazy now.
I
think when their flagship policy was let's leave the EU, all of their other crazy shit, and they have had crazy shit in their manifestos in the past, like making sure that all taxi drivers have to wear uniforms, bringing back smoking areas in pubs, like things that just are so far gone in terms of like the public opinion of them, and like nobody's going to vote for those particular policies. I think it really highlights how slightly mad UKIP are. I think that they don't have any MPs now since Douglas Carswell quit, and he isn't running anymore anyway. But it's going to be really interesting to see how UKIP do, because. Can you be decimated below zero?
I think you'd have to assume they're going to go into long-term decline.
Yeah.
Because they're just...
If you want Brexit to happen, then...
Theresa May's so much more convincing.
I just really hope that Theresa is being really right-wing and crazy so that she wins over all of the UKIP voters, and then she can be slightly sane.
I hope that most of this is posturing. I think she's quite right-wing.
I don't think it's
been assumed that she's like trying to convert the crazy Brexiteer backbenchers in her party, and there's probably something to that line, but I also think that she in her own way is quite right wing.
But then we had the Brexit terms come out from the meeting the other 27
yeah.
Members say they had a meeting without us, which is how the future is going to be now. Mm-hmm. Confirming like that it is not going to be individual states that are going to talk to the United Kingdom about its terms of exit. There's going to have to be a firm track decided whether or not there's going to be like a payment to the EU before any kind of trade negotiation is going to be talked about.
Yeah.
And then Theresa May goes and says something along the lines of, I can't even remember what she said, but it was really like kind of adversary and painted them in a really bad light. And I'm like, why are you posturing? People are already on your side. And yes, there's an election to, like,
I think she's doing it. So I had a working class member of my family recently. We had this really awkward moment at, like, a family reunion where I just came out sort of assuming that most people in the room were Remainers. Because even my dad was, and that sort of fucking surprised me on referendum day. Turned out she was like a hard Brexiteer, and she was talking about how she basically was convinced that Theresa May was somehow going to backpedal on the whole thing because she was a previous Remainer.
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, it makes sense that this is the kind of person Theresa May is aiming to win over at the moment. Because when you look at her political career, she's been very, very careful. And she knows what she's doing in terms of crafting her image and crafting the message that she wants to send out. She's very scandal-free for somebody who's been in politics as long as she has.
Yeah, and doesn't have any of kind of like the backroom baggage. I mean, she's a very boring politician in a lot of ways, but she's a very skilled politician in a lot of ways.
She's boring because she's skilled.
Yeah, and that's how, for whatever reason, everybody wanted like a really dull, we're going to have strong and stable leadership.
Well, that's her line. Her line at the moment is stability.
It was hilarious today on the Andrew Marr show where the first line he says was, do you believe that the British public deserve more than just catchphrases? And then she goes, well, yes, but I do think that they need strong and stable leadership. And then continued to say strong and stable leadership about 7 times throughout this 20-minute interview.
Yeah, fucking good.
I was like, well played, Andrew. You've done good.
Yeah, there's that clip where she was asked about the phrase mugwump, which Boris Johnson used.
Which is now being claimed by the Daily Mail and is used, like, daily in the Daily Mail.
Right, so Boris Johnson
called
Jeremy Corbyn a mugwump, which means somebody who flip-flops on politics, basically.
Yeah, and it's
North American slang. But Theresa May was asked about it, and she said, oh, I don't know about the word mugwump, but I do know that we need strong and stable leadership. So you have to hand it to her. It's quite incredible.
Actually,
the
fact that she's made Boris Johnson Foreign Secretary, I think just day by day, it reinforces how clever she is, because he's a legitimate threat to her being leader of the party and technically leader of the country.
I think he was. I'm not really sure he is anymore.
He's not anymore, because she's put him on a platform where his incompetency makes headlines all the fucking time. The worst thing you could let Boris Johnson do is be Foreign Secretary. If he was, you know, a Defence Minister even, he would be more convincing than what he's doing now. He's not diplomatic at all. He says terrible things, inappropriate things all the time, and he's been put on a stage where that is the most important thing to do.
I would say, though, historically, when he was just a backbencher, he was also very, very ineffective at actually courting publicity for himself, which is why he ended up, you know, becoming London Mayor, because he needed a role in which to broadcast himself. So I think the kind of general readings on why Boris Johnson was picked as Foreign Secretary are not that convincing. The idea that he's been put there so that he's culpable for however Brexit turns out is not plausible.
I don't think it's that. I just think he's been put there so that he can make an ass of himself as publicly as possible.
John, who do you think's going to win?
Oh, it's going to be the Tories. Probably in a landslide.
Do you think that Labour are going to lose to an extent where they will not be okay with Jeremy Corbyn as leader?
No.
And I mean the membership rather than MPs, because obviously the MPs...
You can write a script now. They will lose. They will lose badly. And Jeremy Corbyn will still not go.
Yeah. As I said before, I think he'll stay so long as he needs to change the terms by which the leader's elected in Labour. So that a hard left candidate that could succeed him only needs fewer nominations from MPs and MEPs than previously.
The depressing thing about him is he could legitimately, it's not unimaginable to suppose that he could be the destruction of the Labour Party. He could reduce their sort of support to such levels that another party supplants them.
I actually think it's worse than that for the left. I think that Labour will continue to limp on under hard left leadership. It will not die.
And people
die.
Will continue to just vote red because that's what they do.
He'll actually act as an obstruction, or his successor will at least, to another centre-left party forming or the Lib Dems taking over.
I really think that we're seeing kind of like the referendum has really set a reset button on like the kind of political deal, the political parties in the UK. It will take a while for that to happen. But I think we really do see Labour having more of a role than it kind of has in London, which is in Ireland, where it's very much trade union based. And then somebody like the Lib Dems being like the metropolitan liberal elite party. And then also you have the Tories, which end up being kind of like the One Nation.
The thing that we have to remember, though, stepping back from this, is even in our lifetimes, the Tories have undergone massive image changes. Like, they decided to become the party that supported gay rights and was going to get...
No, they didn't. I will not let people forget this. More Tory ministers voted against gay marriage than for it.
That's fine, and I totally accept that. But the official line...
It's not fine, that's the point!
No. But the official line, because of David Cameron, was we support gay people and we're going to get gay marriage through. And look,
No, I don't think it was ever... I don't think it was ever an official Tory line. It was a government line.
No, it wasn't. By Lib Dems. I distinctly remember when he came in...
It was never Tory policy.
It was, because I distinctly remember.
It was a Cameron policy.
He did that whole
thing. In the manifesto.
He did that whole thing of love is love.
I don't know if it was in the manifesto, but it was his push.
It was a huge...
There was actually good strategic reasons why he would have averred from pushing that through.
It didn't really make sense for him from a strategic point of view.
Thanks, mate, but Lynn Featherston did it anyway.
Because I remember when he came out with that love is love speech, and it was like, really shocking or whatever at the time. But and you know they've done their thing like make their fucking symbol a tree as opposed to a torch so that they can get the environmentalists.
I will say Labour need a logo change.
They've moved
as to the Lib Dems actually.
The bird isn't doing it for you anymore.
Yeah,
they've been brilliant in the past sort of 15 years at trying to capitalise on the centre ground.
The Tories are the most adaptable political party. They're not the same. They always get behind reforms when they see that a change is necessary. And when they don't, it puts them out of power.
This is the problem with when the left sort of talk about them in a sort of derogatory way, as if they're still the party of Thatcher or whatever. They're actually not anymore. Don't get me wrong. There are serious sort of right wing policies that you can criticise, but they have adapted and changed a lot over the past 15 years.
So from one election to another, voulez-vous voter avec moi ce soir? France. Yeah. John, you were saying that you think Marine Le Pen's going to win. Why do you think she's going to win?
Because when you think about it, France are essentially in a social period right now that maybe America were just after 9/11. They have had a succession of very serious attacks dating back to, you know, the Charlie Hebdo shootings.
And then the Bataclan
then
attack.
When you think about the Bataclan... is more horrific than anything that's happened in London because of Islamic terrorism.
Well, the death toll and the...
But it's just, the whole nature of the attack is frightening and horrible. They broke into a concert venue and they shot dead whatever it was, 90-odd people.
I think psychologically it's equivalent to the 7/7 bombings.
So, I'd say...
Because it was people on their commute to work.
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of spreading terror,
I'd say it was kind of worse.
Let's not play top drums with terrorist attacks.
But
you should think that this is a cultural like touch point.
Yeah, I suppose my underlying point being that I totally understand if people in France are scared and want to go for protectionist policies. I don't agree with it. I don't support it. I think Marine Le Pen is a horrible choice, but I understand.
Why do you think she's a horrible choice?
Because she is undoubtedly racist. She comes from a lineage that denied the Holocaust.
Ignore her lineage, because she has kicked her dad out of the party.
What's your evidence that she's actually racist?
This is kind of unfair, because she is.
Don't get me wrong.
She wants to have a Muslim ban in the same way that Donald Trump does. I believe that is a racist policy.
Islam's not
she
a race.
Believes
that's more a cultural thing. But xenophobia. Yeah, you can put under the broad umbrella xenophobia.
She wants to stop people from being able to wear the veil in public, which in France is a slightly weird conversation for people to have because France does have such a vigorous separation of church and state.
It's aggressive secularism.
Aggressive secularism, which clashes quite significantly with religions like Sikhism, Judaism. Orthodox Judaism and Islam quite a lot because they have very prominent ways of showing their devotion.
She's certainly a nationalist. I'm not really sure that describing her as a racist is accurate. But yeah, you know, there's obviously some xenophobic policies in there. Or ones that could be interpreted as
such. I think she's much more of a pragmatist than her father ever was, which is kind of like the interesting thing because he really was a fucking...
Her father was openly anti-Semitic, and denied the Holocaust, downplayed it.
I think technically he said that it was a factor of history or something like that, or a minor moment of history.
Yeah.
It's like, sure. but Marine is so much more focused on power than her dad ever was, is able to compromise in ways that he never was able to. And in that way, this is a far more formidable and far more kind of shocking and scary attempt at the presidency from the Front National than happened in 2002 when her father ran off against Jacques Chirac. But interestingly, she's technically no longer...
She's now technically
running next week as an independent.
Yeah. That's symbolic, though, really, isn't
it? It is symbolic, but she went up in the polls like 2 points.
That's really weird, though, because she's still basically the leader of the National Front.
She's not the leader of the
National Front. No, but psychologically, she basically
is. No, of course, but I think that that shift in narrative that she was able to make, the fact that I'm going to be the person who governs for all of France, not just for the mayoralties that we have in the Front National, is a very similar, actually, kind of narrative that Macron has with his own movement on... on Marche meeting.
Well, but it's
like his own movement on Marche.
It's kind of more organic from Macron because he basically left the party and decided to set up his own. There's a difference.
She's still using all of the
same. In as much as we say he's an independent, he's still running as a member of a party. It's just an extreme minority party.
So current polling has Macron on about 60, Marine on about 40%
of the vote. Right.
The French, especially like the runoff polling predictions, usually have an accuracy hill there of about 3 or 4%. I understand.
You mean a margin of error?
Margin of error, yeah. So,
but
that's
still,
regardless,
that still puts you as like 55-45 as a split.
Yeah,
even
which
even
is
if
still
you
a ten.
It's
which
close.
Is still a 10-point lead. That's not close. 45-55.
If you assume the margin of error brings them closer together.
But I think that margin of error bringing them closer together shows what small chance Marine has and what a huge amount needs to change in the next week or so for her to be able to win. The way that this is... she actually has a better chance of winning than Trump ever had when it came to kind of like national polling.
Yeah.
The difference is that she doesn't have
an electoral college system.
An electoral college system that can amplify working class rural votes in the same way that happened with Trump and meant that he could lose the popular vote by 3 million votes and still become president. Interestingly, The Economist have kind of run a model of if France had the same electoral system as the United States, it would be a toss up between Macron and Le Pen. So I'm the predictor general of this podcast, and I see no evidence at the moment of Marine Le Pen being able to win. What I do think are the consequences of this election is that Macron will get in. He'll be a lukewarm president that nobody's really into, although he is very good on the social medias. And then I think Marine will probably have a really a prominent chance of like making a proper run for it in the next 5 years.
Interesting. I mean, the National Front, if you compare them to UKIP in the UK, they have, as you say, some mayors and that sort of thing. They have more representation in the French regions.
They're the biggest party in the European Parliament as well.
Right, yeah. So they actually have real power. Basically, so if she loses this election, it's not really the end of the world for her.
Oh, no, not at all. And she has done more to They have the phrase in French, de-diabolisation, which is like detoxifying, like the National Front Van. She's done that so fucking well.
Yeah.
The gays love her. Her second in command happens to also be a gay man.
Also, interestingly, she's quite popular among young people, 18 to 24 year olds, and she's very unpopular among pensioners and that sort of thing. Because in Britain, with UKIP, the metrics are entirely the opposite way around. So she's actually seen as kind of a radical youth vote as well.
I read an article about this that said that basically the people who can remember her father and the kind of things that he said are more likely to sort of take against her, because they refuse to believe that the apple falls that far from the tree.
What I find particularly worrying about Marine is how popular she is with gay men. Gay white men specifically, because they have been selling the narrative amongst that very metropolitan group of Islam being a attack and like making your lives less safe.
Islam is quite homophobic. It is fair to characterise it as that.
We've talked about this in the past, as are all Abrahamic religions. But
Christianity...
We're not going to talk till the end this
Christianity has been neutralised in quite a lot of ways. So it is fair to actually... In the UK, at least.
Conversion therapy still exists. And that's largely funded by Christian.
What about root of the worst kind, as they say?
How? Well, because this cork is closed.
If you're allowed to bring up the between Islam and Marine Le Pen's gay vote, if you're allowed to bring up the connection between Islam and Marine Le Pen's gay vote, I'm allowed to say that Islam is homophobic, right?
Yes, I agree with you.
It's a really hard point to make.
But as are all of the Abrahamic religions. So,
but they're not equally homophobic.
Oh my God.
That's just flatly untrue.
There's many Muslim people who are less homophobic than many Christian people.
Yeah, but in general.
Do you want to survey all 1 billion of the Christians and all 1 billion of the Muslims? We're not turning this into an Islam discussion. Stop baiting me.
I'm not baiting you.
You are baiting me.
You're trying to bring something up and then dismiss it, and I'm disagreeing with you.
No, I'm not dismissing you. I just think that equivalence is important.
I think the
equivalence is false. It's a false equivalence.
It's not a false equivalence. You're just saying that because it's a phrase that's used.
I just responded to what you said. I disagree with you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jimmy, you flustering fuck.
So what was your wider point with the Marine Le Pen's gay vote and Islam?
Because Islamophobia is actually working to win over a youth vote. And that sense of fear is something that we don't really see in many other cultures across Europe.
I think it's probably because France has that tradition of aggressive secularism, whereas in the UK, and even in the US to a certain degree, it's far more hands-off.
I mean, interestingly, she's also anti-gay marriage.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting, I don't know what... I only know three gay men in France.
It doesn't matter in the same way in France, though, does it? Because they have...
They have secular marriage.
Yeah, they have secular marriage, which actually a lot of them... A lot of gay people is...
So is gay marriage legal in France?
No, it's equivalent. It's the same as
civil partnership.
Civil partnership,
right? Okay.
So obviously, when you think about it, quite a lot of gay people wouldn't want to get married under a religious ceremony anyway, because
the non-religious option already exists.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's sort of like a weird. Okay. I can understand totally why she gets a youth vote to a degree, though. Going back to the whole tax thing, because. Again, I'm not living in France, so I don't know. But I would suspect there's a certain level of paranoia amongst young people because specifically of the Bataclan. When 7/7 happened, you couldn't...
Did you see, commuters didn't then become a voting group?
No, that's more general. Whereas, the Bataclan attacks were a rock concert and a bar, both of which were presumably mostly frequented by young people. Mm-hmm. So from a threat point of view, you'd think, well, they're attacking cultures that are...
It does seem to me that from the outside, France dealt with the Bataclan attacks in a far more mild way than, say, America dealt with 9/11. It seemed to be far less of a psychological shock.
Sure, but I think that that has a lot to do with the fact that terrorist attacks have never ever really happened on American soil. Whereas in Europe, we've kind of, because of separatist movements that we've had, whether it be ETA in France, the RIA in the UK, or like the Corsicans in ETA in Spain, sorry,
the Basque region,
or the Corsican separatists in France, there has always kind of been like that kind of nasty bombness.
It's also hard for you to comment because how much French news do you see versus American?
There's an availability problem there for sure, which is what I'm just saying. As an outsider, it appears that way, but whether that's true, I don't know. So you think that Macron's got this in the bag then?
I wouldn't say in the bag, but I think that he wins.
Yeah, it's far more likely that he wins than Le Pen.
Yeah,
I'm pretty much on the certain.
And that is because popular votes, when it comes to us, one-on-one runoffs, probably the best way of doing things.
Yeah, and you're still on the side that Le Pen's going to win this.
Pessimist. Yeah, go get your bunkers, people. Everything's fucked anyway. So,
speaking of bunkers, North Korea.
Oh, they don't bunkers.
Nuclear apocalypse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a car park.
These segues will work a lot better if you just play ball a little bit more.
All right. Sorry for ruining your party.
I don't like it when mum and dad fight like this.
So, how worried are you that about what Trump's saying in relation to North Korea? Because he said basically that he's willing to consider military conflict if diplomacy doesn't work.
Which is kind of like the most terrifying thing, because Obama's policy towards North Korea has kind of always been defined by its standoffishness and indifference. Obama tended to kind of leave North Korea alone, despite the general Pacific shift that he wanted to do in his foreign policy, shift towards like the Pacific Rim nations. Trump, see, this was the worrying thing about having somebody like Trump at the helm, is because he's able to say things that are going to rile people up. When he insults Angela Merkel, though, that is probably going to just sour relations between those top individuals and mean that the further downs are going to end up being the ones that make those decisions, and there's not going to be a close relationship at the very top.
Yeah.
When he does it about an unhinged military dictator like Kim Jong-un, then consequences happen, and sometimes those are nuclear war. The one thing that makes me feel okay is that North Korea don't seem to have the capability of firing anything.
This is
the
thing,
moment.
Like the situations that we're looking at, because you can't imagine that that country isn't under sort of constant surveillance. In fact, it is under constant surveillance from the US, because they released footage of a volleyball match being played at a nuclear testing site or something.
Yeah.
And they were trying to decipher what it meant or something.
Yeah. A volleyball match?
Yeah. It was something like
that. I missed this.
Yeah. It was.
I'm going to Google it.
Google it.
Go ahead.
Maybe it was badminton. But, you know, I can't imagine a situation that they would actually, if the US thought there was a serious capability of them being able to fire an intercontinental ballistic missile at the US, I imagine invasion would happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's been suggestions that, well, not even suggestions, the US think that they're developing something that would be able to hit the 48 states.
But what I would imagine is if they think they're under such constant surveillance in North Korea, that if they actually thought that was seriously about to happen, they would hit an airbase or something there.
Possibly, but there's obviously the whole issue of what exactly happens with China. And one of the things that Donald Trump has said is that he's kind of willing to act individually and not collaborate with North Korea.
According to Trump, him and Xi Jinping have quite good relations.
Yeah, busy mates. So what's interesting with the North Korea and the China relationship is that it's quite similar to other relationships that the US has with like Taiwan, South Korea and Japan. Military guarantees. And this is because North Korean forces helped the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese Communist forces, when they were having a civil war against the nationalists. The communists won. The communists then have kind of maintained this strong relationship.
Also the Chinese
nations
want a buffer zone between them and South Korea, don't they?
That's because of American influence and American military kind of like positions in and outposts in South Korea. But that is what is kind of... That's what would complicate things. I believe that the Chinese would be pragmatic enough to kind of let South Korea get on with it. I don't know how the US can function militarily in a region where they are so despised and unwelcome. Because they've
they're not despised everywhere.
You say that
In that region. Yes.
No, that's not true.
The military in South Korea have the American military in South Korea have an appalling reputation because U.S. soldiers positioned out there have immunity in the law, so there have been a lot of rape allegations that have never been able to be taken. To
court. But in general,
China,
in
also,
general,
like,
the actual countries and the states and the governments want an American presence there because it guards against Chinese influence and power.
Sure, but that's not to say you need to have like the public behind you, and the American staging an invasion of North Korea from South Korea is going to have huge pushback from the Korean people, and the Korean people have just unseated their president, and so don't.
She's just been indicted.
But because of weeks and weeks of millions of people taken to the streets in Seoul,
so she's accused of corruption.
Yes, she's accused of some weird corruption. She, like a spiritual ally slash friend, may have influenced business deals. Well, it's very weird, very South Korean.
Right.
So they're having a new presidential election at the moment.
I'm not sure that the Chinese would be that sanguine about South Korea sort of occupying North Korea, if that's what we're talking about.
They would want it to happen without any US military.
There's been the suggestion that the US could keep their troops below the, was it the 48th parallel, is that what it's
38th
called?
Parallel.
38th parallel, which divides North and South Korea. And then that might be a suitable compromise, but...
I mean, I don't think that there's as much animosity between China and the US as the media sort of plays up. I think realistically, at probably the highest levels, they know that there's an interdependency that they can't afford to...
Economically, there's a huge interdependency between the two countries, but China increasingly wants to be recognised as a great power and on the same level as the US.
That's fair enough, but they can't do that. They still can't do that without the US's help.
It depends what you mean, really.
They couldn't afford to just have a sort of completely acrimonious relationship, could they?
That is true, but if you see sort of what they're doing in the South China Sea and that sort of thing, they are militarily pushing out. Their investments in Africa as well show that they are willing to act independently of the US.
China also has the biggest military by personnel, and the second largest military after the US. Obviously, the US spends a ridiculous amount on its military every single year. So the actual numbers in terms of who has what are were we to have a one-on-one war off, then the US would win. But also,
well, everyone would die in nuclear wastelands.
Also that.
But the US have more bigger expensive toys. Basically.
Essentially, yeah. I do not underestimate China's desire to maintain its status as the biggest nuclear... the biggest military might in that region.
Yeah.
And they will push back heavily against the US wanting to do anything militarily in that region. Still get skittish whenever they send an aircraft carrier to the South China Sea.
I'm not sure they would actually do anything, though. For example, if say North Korea made an announcement on their sort of state broadcasting system, as they are often wont to do, that they had suddenly perfected a nuclear intercontinental ballistic missile and there was subsequent military action from the US, I kind of don't see what China could do, because there would be sort of fairly irrefutable evidence that they were a credible threat to the US. So China could posture to be as pissed off as it liked, but I don't think it would actually intervene. Because from an international community point of view, so many ally countries and so many members of the UN would basically turn around and say, well, we are legitimately talking about a nuclear rogue state, so are you really going to be on their side?
What I think needs to happen is... For it to be done as nicely and calmly as possible, South Korea need to be spearheading any kind of military action that would end up happening. I don't know how I feel about the Obama era kind of like overhang of just let them get on with it and say what they want, because that clearly can't happen when
South Korea option is that inevitably it will be seen as an American thing because it will be bankrolled by the Americans.
Sure, but I think that of course it will be. But as long as there are no military presence by the Americans is kept to a minimum, China can be kept on side and happy and kind of allow that to happen. As soon as US gets too involved, China are going to be like, no, no.
Yeah, I mean, this is by far the scariest thing that Trump is involved in. Just because of the potential consequences.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's... I know that North Korea are kind of crazy. But the economic kind of, like, growth of that area in South Korea, Taiwan, Japan, East China, has been phenomenal, not least because of the amount of peace and stability that has been afforded that region for so many decades now. Obviously, they still have, like, China saying, oh, I own these islands and I call them this, and and Japan go, no, they're mine, whoa, and Japan still honour, like, murderers of Chinese citizens and from World War II and all that kind of stuff. But actually, like, there's been no direct conflicts in those regions, which has meant that you have, like, the Asian tigers, right? Some of the fastest growing economies in the world. But were that to change, it kind of throws everything out.
In an absolute worst case scenario, though, say an American city gets hit by a nuclear missile, I can't see anything else happening but North Korea get obliterated.
Yeah.
In a hail of fucking missiles.
I don't know what the sort of upshot of all of that is.
I don't think probably the Chinese would be warned through some kind of back channels that, look, a lot of nukes are about to explode on your doorstep. I don't think they're then going to go, really? Well, we're going to fire some at you.
I don't even know.
It doesn't make sense. Why would you escalate? You've already got a fucking terrible problem. Why would you escalate it into like a China-US nuclear war?
I mean, because nobody. All wars ever.
Why
would you guys?
Are
you familiar with World War One?
But from a Chinese point of view, if they get information that the US is going to basically obliterate North Korea, they can be as pissed off about it as they like. But it doesn't actually fuck up their country, people.
I mean, landing a bunch of nuclear missiles into a neighbouring country inevitably has consequences in terms of radioactive fallout and all the rest of it. The trouble with your game theory thinking is that you're not really, and I'm not really aware of the actual weaponry that we're talking about here.
Right.
Oh, I am.
Oh, you are?
No.
Oh, okay. That's why I don't know how America would respond in that situation, because my understanding is it could potentially easily escalate into just complete obliteration.
Don't see that happening.
Cool. Well, the experts have spoken.
Being ignorant has spoken.
We would love it if you could leave a 5 stars and leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us big time. We've seen more and more people listening to us, especially in the run up to the election, and that's brilliant. If this is your first episode, hey, how you doing? I'll be less creepy next time.
A little bit creepy.
But do find us, leave us a review on iTunes or your podcasting app, and find us at Right Dishonor if you have any specific feedback for us on Twitter. John, where can they find you on the interwebs if you want to be found?
I don't know what my Twitter handle is.
Donkey OK.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
I think it's just JC Savant.
You can't change your Twitter handle.
If you really want to see my face, I'm on the BBC website having talked about depression or something. So
I'll put the link in the show notes. Be fine.
Should we? you can find me at Jazz of John if there's anything particularly you want to chastise me about. And Jimmy is at JDE Nichols. Love you lots. See you next week. Toodaloo.